This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is continuing coverage of United States versus Sean Diddy Combs from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.
Here we are. We are at the almost end of the trial of Sean Diddy Combs. Closing arguments are to begin on Thursday or today, maybe yesterday, whenever you're watching or listening to this. But that's where we're standing right now. We're going to take a look back at the trial itself. What happened in the trial? What it means? And what's next in the trial of Sean Diddy Combs? After presenting a comprehensive narrative over six intense weeks, federal prosecutors finally rested, leaving jurors with a stark, unfiltered portrayal, if you will, of Diddy's alleged criminal enterprise. In total, prosecutors called 34 witnesses, presented graphic, often unsettling evidence that will haunt them in their dreams for the rest of their lives. You're going to dream about Diddy's parties tonight. You are.
You know, these people...
You've got the red room.
Are there things in place... I've never been part of a jury. We've talked about that before, how I pretty much got booted once they figured out what I did for a living.
I was afraid you're going to say, I've never been part of a Diddy party.
No, I've never been part of a freak off. Thank God. But I wonder if there is anything in place for maybe some counseling afterwards to deal with. I mean, they're being traumatized by the shit they're seeing during this trial. This is second, like, what would you call it? Something trauma, but it's
is it secondhand trauma?
Something of that nature. I mean, it's not directly happening to them, but them having to watch it, like they can't look away. Yeah. They have to see it.
Yeah. Can they civilly sue Diddy? Can they civilly sue Diddy after this for having to be on this jury and be traumatized by what he put them through? That'd be an interesting one. I wonder if that's ever happened. Has a juror ever civilly sued the defendant in a criminal trial civilly because of what they had witnessed or for trauma of what they had to witness in the
Ask AI if you can sue for
look that up. I'm gonna keep going through this and
I'm betting that that's not a thing.
There's
because
probably something that prevents that.
Yeah.
Because someone's would have had to have attempted this by now.
I would think.
Unless we just came up with a brand new idea. In total, prosecutors called 34 witnesses. They presented graphic, often unsettling evidence, including explicit video footage. I think one day it was like 30 minutes or somewhere. It was a long time. They had to sit there and watch Diddy freak off. And detailed financial and travel records and harrowing firsthand accounts from victims who describe coercion, abuse, and intimidation at Combs' infamous freak-off parties.
Dude.
And what did you find?
Now, of course, this is ChatGPT giving the answer. So for those of you listening out there going, I've got an idea. Obviously, if that's something you want to do, you need to talk to an attorney. But it says, yes, under certain circumstances, a juror may potentially sue if they were traumatized by evidence presented during a trial. But the path is difficult, and the legal protections for courts make these claims rare and challenging to win.
Really?
Yes. But it doesn't exclusively say you can't do that.
You can't do that on TV. Wasn't that a Nickelodeon show?
Yeah, I think so. So civil lawsuits are a long shot. Alternative avenues may be requesting therapy or counseling referrals from the court, victim compensation programs. and legislative action in rare cases where traumatized jurors have petitioned for change, like mental health support or screening. So, interesting.
One could potentially sue Diddy. I wonder if it's like if it's state law affects that as well, as terms of like what, you know, what actually would be. I don't know.
Again, it talks about how difficult it is to win this, but there have been reports of jurors experiencing PTSD-like symptoms after disturbing trials, child abuse, violent murder. Yeah. In some cases, these led to public discussions about the need for post-trial support systems. What I was just asking about, if I had to sit through Gilgo Beach,
yeah,
I'm out.
I think the Koberger trial, they're going to show
graphic
bodies, and I don't want to see it. That's that you can't unsee that shit. And
but you, I think as a juror, you have to. You can't like shield your eyes. I mean, you've got to look. That's evidence. You are a juror. What do you do?
Maybe that's how you get out of jury duty at one there too, where it's like you're going to be exposed to the graphic evidence. How do you feel about that? I'll throw up. I'll just vomit projectile at the fellow jurors.
Yeah.
Everywhere. I'm talking like fucking pea soup, like exorcist shit. Yeah. I wouldn't, but I would say that.
Right. And one more thing I'd like to add to that. If you need to get out of something at work, always explosive diarrhea. Nobody can fight that.
Nobody can fight the power of explosive diarrhea.
It's a true story.
It sounds like a 80s product or something.
It does.
No one can fight the power of explosive diarrhea. By
this Menin. Day off of work sponsored by Imodium AD.
Just, yeah. Well, the defense, another thing of what happened here in this case, they chose not to call any witnesses. Kind of a big deal, surprisingly, or perhaps confidently. The defense team opted to rest immediately after the prosecution finished. It was just basically stand up, sit down, we rest. This means the jury is not hearing from character witnesses or expert testimonies brought by Combs' lawyers or random children that he somehow adopted in strange videos that are online saying how wonderful Mr. Combs or is or whatever the hell he's been up to. Most notably, Sean Combs himself explicitly declined to testify. In a memorable courtroom moment when Judge Aaron Samaranian directly asked him how he felt about that decision, Combs casually quipped, "I'm doing great, thank you. You're doing an excellent job," eliciting chuckles from an otherwise tense courtroom.
Wow.
Another thing that happened, the jury got their final instructions. They included the judge finalizing and previewing jury instructions, clarifying exactly how jurors should weigh charges like racketeering, sex trafficking, and interstate prostitution. These instructions emphasize definitions of coercion, consent, and the criteria required to prove the existence of a criminal enterprise. So, that's what has happened in the trial of Diddy thus far. What it means? Well, the prosecution's case now has been fully presented. Prosecutors have meticulously crafted a powerful narrative. They've shown extensive evidence aimed at proving that Combs orchestrated and oversaw coercive sexual activities under the facade of lavish parties, leveraging his immense wealth, fame, and influence. And there's the exhaustive presentation, the videos, the texts, the hotel records, the explicit communications. That paints kind of a disturbing picture of organized exploitation rather than consensual encounters. What matters about the defense's bold and risky strategy of not calling any witnesses? Well, by presenting zero witnesses, the defense essentially made a calculated gamble They're arguing implicitly, that the prosecution's case doesn't even merit a rebuttal, hoping the strategy highlights perceived weaknesses in the evidence or alleged inconsistencies in the testimonies. Combs' choice not to testify himself might prevent jurors from humanizing or sympathizing with him, but it also avoids potentially damaging cross-examinations that could undermine the defense's reasonable doubt strategy. What do you think about that?
To me, it feels like they gave up.
Did they? Or is less is more?
This is your opportunity. This is where you speak your piece. This is where you give your side of the story. They didn't do that. I don't know. It's not the strategy I would have taken, but I'm not a less is more kind of a person. I'm like, you know, throw the glitter and put it all out there. I would have done it differently.
How old is Sean Combs?
Let's find out. I want to say 47.
55.
55.
So if he got 15 years for this.
He's an old man.
He's an old man, but he could get out at 70. I'm wondering.
These 15 years? That's it?
It just depends. I mean, that would be the minimum. So if he's trying to go that route, I don't know, just shaking the dice at this point to see what he would get and not incriminate himself further on anything else.
70 is, you know, 55 now, 15 years in prison.
I'm wondering if he's playing the odds, the long game here, if he's going to reinvent himself as Reverend Sean Combs.
Oh, are you shitting me?
D-Rev.
You're probably right.
Rev Diddy. Rev D. And he's going to find the Lord and he's going to repent for his sins and he'll start preaching in prison. He'll try and be like a real, you know, inspirational dude. And he'll get out. And then this have all fizzled out. Look, he's atoned. He's, don't we all believe in giving second chances? All that sort of shit will happen. And he'll have a very successful online ministry.
I could see it. I could see it. I totally could.
There's my prediction. Or he's, I mean, if he gets out ever. Or he will be behind bars for the rest of his life. But like, what's the best odds here? It's like, I think he's pretty much guaranteed he's going to go down for a while. So maybe play the long game. And don't try and argue anymore. On a good day here, you'll get 15 years. A bad day, it could be a lot more. But there is a potential for a good day. Because it's going to be a lovely day. Lovely day. Lovely day.
Lovely day.
Lovely day. The absence of defense witnesses moves the trial into a stark binary choice for jurors. Trust the detailed emotional testimonies presented by prosecutors or embrace the skepticism showed by defense cross-examination that implied consent and portrayed alleged victims' complicity in Combs' lifestyle. At this juncture, it's all down to the jury's interpretation of credibility, consent, and coercion. So, what's next? Closing arguments. Scheduled Thursday. So might be the day you're listening to this, Might be yesterday, might be tomorrow. It all depends. But they are scheduled for the 26th of June 2025. Barring anything crazy happening, and God knows crazy things never happen in this world, both prosecution and defense will present their closing arguments. Each side will have several hours to make their final case directly to the jury. Prosecutors are expected to revisit and underscore their strongest evidence, highlighting Combs' alleged systematic abuse, manipulation, and orchestration of criminal activities. The defense is expected to frame the entire scenario as consensual adult behavior, painting the prosecution's narrative as sensationalized, exaggerated, and unfairly judgmental of Combs' private lifestyle choices. Jury deliberations could begin soon as well. Immediately after closing arguments, Judge Semerania will deliver formal instructions. Jurors may begin deliberations as early as could be this week or Monday, depending on the procedural timing. It's a complex case. There's a lot to it. A lot of gravity. Deliberations could last anywhere from several days to weeks. Still, the thoroughness of the prosecution's presentation might streamline juror decision-making. What do you think? Do you think this is going to be a long wait on the jury? Are they going to walk in and walk out?
I do not.
No?
I would be willing to bet that Shoney's gift certificate that I lost in the Karen Reed bet that we made.
Yeah.
I'm betting this is going to, it's just going to be the time spent doing the paperwork. They're going to walk into the room, grab their Subway sub, and go, all right, let's fill out the paperwork.
And then somebody's going to go, damn, I didn't want chicken. I wanted turkey.
Yeah.
And that's going to hold everything up because then somebody's got to get to the Subway again and then get another sandwich and bring it up because he's going to say, I'm not going to express my opinion until I get my turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And is this light mayo? No, it's not. I asked for light mayo. And what about the pictures? I asked for the pictures. Don said there was going to be pictures. And now I got to sit here and eat a fucking Subway sandwich with regular mayo.
See, this is going to be a quick turnaround. I could be very wrong about this, but I have a feeling what these people saw is stuck in their memories. And they're thinking nothing but guilty. I can't imagine that they're sitting back going, well, you know, this is just his lifestyle.
I hope not.
It's a pretty bizarre lifestyle.
It's three counts, so we'll see what could happen. Here's our possible outcomes in this. If convicted on all counts, Sean Combs faces severe penalties, including potential life imprisonment. Federal racketeering and sex trafficking charges carry significant mandatory minimum sentences, making conviction particularly dire. An acquittal, conversely, obviously would immediately free Combs from custody, although he would likely face continued civil lawsuits and reputational repercussions regardless. Final thought on all this? I mean, it's a lot. The prosecution's massive sprawling case against Sean Combs to the direction that we're going to see the closing arguments of Sean's side go.
What do you think?
I think he's going to be found guilty on all charges, if not most charges.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's going to put him away for a long time. How long? You know, there's going to be appeals. There's going to be this. There's going to be that.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I mean, people they win on appeal. Look at Cosby.
Oh, do I have to?
He's out. They appealed.
Ugh.
And they found that a piece of evidence that was admitted was supposed to not be. It was supposed to be, he was supposed to be immune from any sort of prosecution based on the evidence that he was giving in a deposition or something. And they used it. And then that made the whole case get thrown out. So look, it's not crazy to think that this guy's not going to be out at some point in time again. I hope not. But we live in a strange, strange world. You know?
I don't know.
Trump decides to pardon him because he's going to make Sean John fashion great again. There you go. Everything is Sean John at the Trump store going forward. Nothing weird about that. Great artist, great performer. We're going to make Diddy great again.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
Meta. Make Diddy great again.
Now, look, I don't care what side you're on. That's funny. That's just funny.
I don't have enough alcohol for that thought. I really don't. Yeah.
Trump and Sean John branded baby oil.
I was just going to say baby oil. The Trump baby oil. Oh, God.
Big tea on that. And then Sean John's signature there.
Oh, the world we live in today.
Anything is possible, my friends. Anything is possible. In the comment section, let us know your thoughts on where you think this might all be going. Guilty? Innocent? Hung jury? Anything's possible. Pardoned? You know, abducted and missing out of the jail cell before sentencing and hanging out on an island with Tupac somewhere?
Epstein Island.
Tell me where you think.
This is continuing coverage of United States versus Sean Diddy Combs from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
It came and it went, the trial of Sean Diddy Combs, a lot faster than I think a lot of us expected it to, but here we are. We're at the end. You may be listening to this after there's a verdict or seeing this after a verdict or while they're deliberating or right before, because we're all in this very tight place right now. It's a legal chess match that's been unfolding in the federal trial of Sean Diddy Combs. Case has been packed with sex trafficking charges, graphic evidence, and a defense team that just dropped the mic. Like, we're good. Go on, continue on. But By saying absolutely nothing, really. No witnesses, no Diddy on the stand, just a quiet gamble that the jury shrugs and says, okay, well, let's see. What that strategy is, I don't know. Was it a flex, a white flag to break it all down? I'm bringing someone in who's been on both sides of the courtroom, defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis. Let's dive into that. No witnesses being called by the defense of Diddy. A lot of ways of looking at this. How are you looking at this?
Now, it's a risk. It's a bold move. Does it signal confidence? Does it say that the defense believes the prosecution hasn't met their burden? It's their job to put on the evidence and meet that legal threshold. They haven't done it. We're not going to help them from the defense side. Or is it some kind of tacit admission that they don't have a lot of folks who are going to back up their narrative? And so let's give it to the jury and hope for the best.
Do you find it hard to really grasp what the strategy is in this case, since we can't hear the arguments in court? We can't hear or see how it's been going. We've just been getting reports from people. And obviously the words that we're hearing, I mean, it sounds horrible, the stuff that he was up to. But there's also questions of, did they prove their case on all of the charges? And we'll get into that in just a few seconds. But is it more difficult to determine, you think, on the outside for an attorney or just a layperson to really feel what's going on in there?
Totally. So, Tony, the federal courts have this policy where they don't allow video recording as a general rule on any of their cases. And so, you know, that sort of conflicts with the constitutional right to a public trial. And in fact, courts have said the public has an interest in knowing what's going on, especially in a high profile, nationally publicized case like this. And so we're sort of relegated to these secondhand reports and what have you. But there have been a lot of them. There are journalists in the courtroom. And so we are receiving information, albeit kind of secondhand.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing about, you know, a public trial. And when they invented that and made that statement and made that the rule, obviously it wasn't a broadcast trial. It was public. So, I mean, what we're getting essentially is the same sort of reporting we would have had, you know, many years ago by basically print reports, and then it turns into audio and all of that. But it is just, you know, people writing down their notes and coming back and reporting on it. We get the information now much quicker, you know, right after they walk out of the courtroom. But it's still the same sort of thing. Is that something that, you know, do you think needs updating here in this country? Should we have federal courts allow public to not only, you know, see it if they happen to be geographically close by, but those who can't be? Should this been something that the public as a whole would have or should have been able to see go down?
You know, the courts are very slow to reacting to advances in technology, advances in societal norms and understanding, that kind of thing. And so in my appraisal, what's the benefit of the court not allowing video to show these trials when nearly all state courts are open to that? What interest are they serving in doing that that would outweigh the public and the public's, you know, receiving information about very important cases that implicate some really weighty societal issues? I just don't see it. Let the cameras in there. Who cares?
Yeah, I would agree. I don't really quite, I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, well, we're going to keep operating on this the same way they operate on many other principles that have been proven to not be the best of ideas. Like the parental thing with kids and when they're have one parent that's abusive, but it's best for reunification, not just keeping that kid away from the abuser. Reunification eventually, if we can make that. Like, no, not always the best idea. But I digress. So we have closing arguments that are going on basically as we speak right now. But let's talk about the case itself. Prosecutors, just right before going to closing arguments, dropped the arson and kidnapping charges against Diddy. Give me your insight. Why did they do that?
This was a curious move, and I think it might come back to hurt him. You know, my apprehension is that, you know, you have a case as a prosecutor, it looks good on paper, and you think, oh gosh, I can prove all of these serious things. And then you get in that gauntlet in trial. That's not always how it goes. And so I'm wondering if the prosecution wants the jury to focus on just the most compelling, the strongest potential grounds for the RICO charge, and eliminated these other less strong grounds. However, it could look like they're kind of surrendering, that they're kind of saying, hey, we told you we could prove this stuff, but we actually can't. But trust us when we say we can prove these other crimes.
Well, I mean, is that part of the case here, considering once they started going, one of their witnesses did go missing, and that witness was supposedly going to be kind of backing up a lot of their case with the RICO and the kidnapping, and since they really couldn't have the witness there for that, they had to kind of drop it, and I guess, and then the rest of the case, the Diddy and or the Cassie area of all this, we certainly saw sexual coercion and abuse and things like that, but I don't know if it crosses the line to kidnapping. What about any other piece of this trial? Did you see that there was anything that would lead to anyone to believe that, or was it just really not quite there, reasonable doubt?
You know, for me, the whole presentation by the government, that's just my opinion, it's been a bit underwhelming. You know, going into this, they came in guns ablazing, talking about arson and kidnapping and sex trafficking and people being drugged and these sort of like, you know, Caligula-esque orgies with all of these stars. And that's not really what the evidence has been. And so I'm just wondering how the jury is going to be impacted by this 11th hour change. You know, are they going to say that, gosh, the government kind of, you know, made a lot to do about this case, and then they didn't really have the goods? Or are they going to say, hey, we're going to be laser focused on these other grounds for RICO that are more provable and that might spell doom for Diddy?
Is that, I mean, that's got to be a difficult thing sometimes. And you got to figure out, I guess, who your jury is and how they're going to react to whatever you're going to put in front of them. Because, I mean, we've seen in many cases, and I'm sure you have seen in far, far, far more cases than me, they can be kind of confusing, or they can be confused, maybe I should say, even when the jury forms to most would not be that confusing. But if you don't look at them all the time and you're not used to seeing them, yeah, I mean, it takes a little to figure this out. Is that something, I mean, they're really concerned with here of let's make this as simple as possible. Let's not let them just give a couple light charges and walk away. Let's have them really, the options are stark. It's either you're going to be checking the boxes and stuff that's going to put them away for at least 15 years or more, or you're not. There's nothing really, it seems, light on the table here. Is that accurate?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think absolutely. And it's an important point because the RICO charge itself is terribly confusing. The jury instructions that I've seen for that charge are difficult for a seasoned attorney to follow, let alone a layperson juror. And so perhaps the government wanted to simplify this for the jury and say, hey, you know, there aren't 20 moving parts. Now there are six. And that's more manageable for a jury because when there's confusion in that deliberation room, sometimes confusion translates into doubt, which can translate into reasonable doubt.
Do they ask enough questions when they need to ask enough questions from back of that jury room, just from your experience, you know, as a prosecutor or a defense attorney, because you'll see both ends of it. Have you seen more where they come back and ask the right questions or more where they come back with a verdict? And it's like, if you had just asked this question, you would have understood this better and it wouldn't have led you to that decision.
You know, on the whole, in my experience, the jurors ask important questions while they're back there, including clarifying questions about the jury instructions, the charges, the verdict form, that kind of thing. Because if they don't, and if there's some kind of misunderstanding, you can get inconsistent verdicts within a trial.
Yeah.
And that itself can be a ground for appeal. So it's really important that the juries understand what they're supposed to be doing back there.
Let's talk about the RICO charges. The Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act is being used to argue that Diddy ran a criminal enterprise involving sex trafficking, drugs, and violence. And he's saying, no, that wasn't part of my company. That was just the weekends, basically. RICO allows prosecutors to bundle multiple acts under one broad umbrella. That's why we've been seeing it used outside of just like mafioso type cases. We saw it in the R. Kelly case. We're seeing it here. But yeah, it is complex and controversial when applied outside of organized crime. So how exactly are prosecutors trying to meld this and form this in a way that a jury is going to understand it so they get what a RICO charge is and see how that applies to Diddy? How do you work that through your mind to explain it?
So kind of the intellectual flow chart, if you will, for it is for a RICO charge, there's got to be a criminal enterprise and there have to be at least two predicate offenses that happen within 10 years that are connected to that criminal enterprise. Like running a stop sign isn't enough. They got to be serious crimes. Mm-hmm. And so I think the prosecution is going to argue that the Bat Boy Entertainment helped facilitate some of this sex trafficking that they contend was non-consensual. They set up hotels, that they engaged in payments at times. Sometimes they're fueling these hotel parties with drugs. And so what the prosecution's going to say is that the sex trafficking crimes themselves can be the predicate offenses for RICO so long as they can connect it to Bad Boy. You know, they've been able to have some successes in drawing those connections. There were some receipts and texts entered into evidence. On the other hand, there are some Bad Boy affiliates who say, hey, we didn't know about any criminal activity. We certainly didn't agree to facilitate it. And so that one, there's some conflicting evidence there.
I mean, ultimately, the man with the checkbook is Diddy. So he's going to do what he wants and pull the funds from wherever. Is it really come down to where the funding for these parties came from or the people or persons involved who planned it? Because if you're operating off of Diddy's personal card on everything and all this, is that RICO, even if you have employees, helping to facilitate these things, but all the funding is coming out of Diddy's personal account, not the Bad Boy Entertainment account. I guess the other question would be, who are these people employees of? Would they be employees of Bad Boy Entertainment? Because I don't know the answer to that. I don't know how his assistants were set up or anybody set up. Was that Bad Boy or was that Sean Combs Enterprises or whatever it was called? I suppose it doesn't matter if it's Bad Boy or not. If it's under a business structure of any type, really, that would be constituting a RICO charge, whether it's just, you know, you're employed to be making the life of Diddy the life of Diddy as assistants and stuff. That's still a corporate structure. It's not Diddy personally.
Totally. So to the first question, the funding is critical. I mean, certainly the jury is going to want to see, hey, were there business accounts that were used to rent out these hotels, that were used to buy flights for male escorts, that kind of thing. It's important, but it's not necessary. Under RICO, you can have just the affiliates of the alleged criminal enterprise arranging things and really the central pieces that did they have knowledge that there was some criminal activity going on, and did they coordinate all together to advance that criminal activity in connection with the criminal enterprise? Also, the criminal enterprise, that's like, it's a very low standard to meet that. It's kind of just a loose confederation of people who happen to be working in coordination. It doesn't even have to be a business. Here it is a business. Mm-hmm. And so it's a much lower standard than people think to prove that some criminal enterprise exists. And I think that, you know, the government went far in trying to establish that in having text messages from other bodyguards and from executives at Bad Boy Entertainment that all, according to the government, sort of coalesce in some of these criminal acts.
I think a lot of times when we hear the word sex trafficking or a layperson hears that, they're thinking, you know, a bunch of immigrants at the back of a truck or something that have been picked up, and this is, they're just, that's not how it typically, I mean, is that part of it sometimes? Sure. But that's not always how it has to be. I mean, the fact that, you mean, sex work is illegal in most states. If you're purchasing a sex worker to come in from New Jersey and the parties in New York, we're crossing state lines, just a theoretical one out there. And the purpose of that person coming to that party is to do sex work with Diddy, his guests, whatever. Is that sex trafficking just like that? Even though that person is knowingly coming, they're not being forced, it's not coercion, they're getting paid. Is it sex trafficking if they're willingly coming for that purpose to another state?
It's a really important point because I agree with you. There is kind of a misnomer in terms of sex trafficking and what that means. It doesn't need to include sort of, you know, a forced migration of a bunch of people mm-hmm. to go and do something. The charge in this case is sex trafficking by force, fraud, or coercion, which requires that someone engaged in a commercial sex act by force, fraud, or coercion. And so all that really depends on is having some commercial sex worker, which we have ample evidence yes. of, the Punisher for one. So then the remaining question is, was it by force, fraud, or coercion? That's the part that the jury, I think, is going to wrestle with. But sex trafficking is also a lower standard than perhaps our societal understanding might suggest.
And that's the interesting part, I guess, of this case. It's not even so much about the state lines. It's about once they're there, and they're there for that job, was there force, fraud, or coercion involved in them performing the job? Meaning they felt that they were being forced or coerced into having sex with people. That's a gray line to a lot of jurors, especially if it is a sex worker. What were you expecting to have happen here when Diddy hired you to be a sex worker? But obviously rape is something that you would not really expect to be part of it. But we have to, is there even evidence of that with some of the sex workers? It's going to be a difficult one, I think, to to convince a jury on, quite honestly. I mean, where do you think it stands? Because from what I've understood, from what I've taken out of a lot of this from the testimony, other than the direct things with Cassie and some assistants and some people that are really directly close, we're not hearing a lot from sex workers that, you know, they're like held captive in Diddy's land. It seems they kind of came and went, at least most of them. Other ones who didn't get involved in a closer relationship didn't seem to have those sort of stories.
Right. As far as I can tell, none of these sex workers are alleging that they were forced to do something criminally that they didn't want to do. I think the sex trafficking by force, fraud, and coercion charges are based on Cassie and based on Jane. And so, you know, if there was evidence where Diddy said, hey, I need you to do this freak off or else I'm going to beat the hell out of you. Mm-hmm. That's sex trafficking by force, fraud, or coercion.
Sure.
However, that's not what we have. There was sort of this specter of threats, this implication and this subjective understanding from Cassie and Jane that they didn't feel like they had a choice. But that's not necessarily enough. The government's got to prove that Diddy knew Cassie and Jane felt they didn't have a choice, and he forced them to do this anyway through his machinations, whatever they may be. And so that's kind of an added level of proving that Diddy knew that they didn't have felt they didn't have a choice and went forward anyway in a coercive fashion. That's yet another layer that's going to be difficult to prove.
That's what I was expecting to see if he was going to call any witnesses. I was expecting to see some people to come up and go, no, this wasn't coercion. No, this wasn't this. No, this wasn't that. Obviously, no witnesses are called. Do you think there's nobody out there that would testify to that? Or is it just, let's not keep focusing on Diddy having sex with sex workers. It's already been brought out. We know that's happened. We don't think they proved it beyond a reasonable doubt that this was some sort of coercion. I don't know. Are you surprised that we didn't hear anybody backing up Diddy in any way, shape, or form?
I am surprised. I thought they would call at least like two witnesses or so who would come in and say, you know, hey, I'm from Bad Boy. I was at one of these parties and nothing seemed non-consensual to me. No one was saying no. They weren't saying stop. They weren't, you know, their body language wasn't sort of resistant or something like that. It seemed perfectly consensual. I think that would go a long way. And then further, another witness they could have called is someone who said, hey, yeah, I work for Bad Boy and I had no knowledge of any crimes going on. I was just doing my job, you know, day-to-day work. I would expect those types of witnesses to be called. They weren't called. Is it because they don't exist? That's a question that could be lingering in the jury's mind.
I mean, or is it just, you know, let's leave it out by omission and then make the jury wonder, like, maybe nobody else does exist. But there are people who do exist who had quite a case against him, Cassie Ventura being one of them. The jury saw that video of him beating the crap out of her in the Intercontinental Hotel, stomping on her head, throwing a vase at her, dragging her through the hall. Pretty damaging stuff. And then they heard several days of her testimony that went far more dark and into brutal territory that makes that video look pretty tame, quite honestly. We have that as being a big part of this. How much do you think just that element of this case is going to weigh on the jury's decision over all three charges, just because of how damning that is, and them maybe just being a little trigger happy, going, he did that, he can go down for the other things too. Just kind of a, you know, you're a horrific human being, let's just get you away.
The shock factor cannot be understated. That video is terribly evocative in the worst way for Diddy. And on top of that, it sort of communicates to any common person, hey, if he's capable of doing that, he's at least capable of these other accusations. You know, that being said, one question I think that the defense should ask in closing argument rhetorically to the jury is, you know, was Cassie forced, or excuse me, did that physical violence force Cassie to do these freak-offs? You know, was there some direct imminent threat? Or was it just this was a complicated and abusive and horrible relationship? And on top of that, she chose to do these freak-offs. You know, I think that subtle distinction is important because that physical force has to have a contributing factor to the sex trafficking by coercion. They got to make that link.
They do. And I think that's obviously the abuse that he has rained down on her is pretty obvious. That question, though, is, you know, she has agency too. Did she just did she stay because she was fearful? I know she's argued that, and I get that. I believe she probably is fearful, but courts don't always look at it the same way a psychologist would. A psychologist could look at this and go, yeah, I get why you were here. This was fear, and you felt you had no choice, and this was why you were here. Courts don't quite grasp all of that quite the same way as a doctor would, and understanding the psychology behind it. Do you think the court will see it that way, or are they going to look more at, you know, you're an adult, you were coming and going, you were not, you know, technically locked down there. You could have, there was a lot of windows where you could have used agency and got the hell out of there. Would it have been a mess? Would it have been hell? Yeah, I'm sure it probably would have been horrible, but it wasn't completely impossible. How do you think a juror, and I'm not trying to victim shame here, I get where, why she stayed, but do you think that that is going to play well enough in front of a jury for them to believe that and the court to believe that?
Without question, there are a series of unfortunate circumstances. Clearly, some trauma was inflicted. People were victimized. Abuse was going on. That seems pretty evident. That being said, you know, a person who is an alleged victim getting on the stand and saying, hey, I was affected by all of these circumstances, and so I felt I didn't have a choice. I felt I couldn't leave. That is certainly regrettable, without question. Is that the same thing, though, as Diddy forcing someone to engage in a sex act because of those circumstances? That's a question that's separate and apart from these sort of sociological considerations that are clearly at play here. And the court looks at things a little bit more coldly, I would say. Mm-hmm. And the jury instructions don't allow for, you know, if you felt sorry for Cassie and you think she truly believes she didn't have a choice, you got to find him guilty. There's a lot more that has to be proven for a charge like this.
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly think so. Obviously, jurors are human, though. So if they were affected by this, you know, maybe they'll lean more in that direction. But yeah, I mean, yeah, it is a colder lean because it doesn't take all those factors into consideration. The fact that we also didn't see evidence of co-conspirators, I mean, that's usually part of a RICO case. Maybe we do have co-conspirators, but they took plea deals. I mean, does that still mean there's co-conspirators? They said at the beginning and opening, we're going to see co-conspirators. We didn't see any co-conspirators like explicitly named here. We saw, you know, some assistants that probably should be getting charged, but probably are not right now for their testimony. Was that showing co-conspirators, I guess?
You know, I thought it was a severe misstep by the government to not identify and charge co-conspirators, because we're talking about a criminal enterprise. That's multiple people. That's affiliates. That's sort of a gang of folks who are doing crime together. But here we only have one person charged with a crime. So it kind of undercuts just our general understanding of what a criminal enterprise might be. Now, certainly there were some folks who were engaged in some underhanded activities with drugs and arrangements and texts and everything else. But, you know, do they appear to be criminal agents of Diddy who are all acting in concert to pull off this massive sex trafficking? That's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah. Certainly had people who were complicit in doing it, but did they believe they were engaging in something that was illegal too? Or did they think this is just really, you know, just extreme behavior by one of the richest people out there that seems to like this stuff? You don't know, you know, how, other than having to clean up some really messy rooms, I don't know that they would have known what exactly was going on behind closed doors, or did they? I mean, there was testimony, not testimony, but we heard stories from people who had been out and claimed to have seen Diddy being very abusive to Cassie. Actually, there was testimony about that in this trial. I forgot. So it does make you wonder, behind closed doors, at the house, assistants, things like that. If Diddy is willing to be abusive in public at restaurants towards the person he's with, I would think maybe behind closed doors, that wouldn't be a far stretch to wonder if they were doing the same thing there.
Very fair point. And there certainly was testimony about public assaults and that kind of thing. So what that means is that perhaps some of the Bad Boy Entertainment folks had knowledge that there was at least some criminal activity, like an assault going on. But another layer, another question is, did they materially aid in bringing about further crimes with the knowledge that they're doing crime. That's really what RICO contemplates. Like you said, think about the mafia, for example. Those are all folks who they know what they're doing when, you know, five of them stop a retail or a bus with retail items, a truck with retail items and stick them up. Yeah. Here, it's just a different scenario.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. Let's talk about the charges here for a moment and what specifically they are and what, if convicted, Diddy could be facing. The charges carry minimum starting at 15 years and could result in life if certain allegations are proven. We have the racketeering conspiracy, accused of running a criminal enterprise under federal racketeering laws. Prosecutors allege he orchestrated legal activities, including sex trafficking, kidnapping, arson, bribery, forced labor, obstruction of justice, and more as part of the long-term scheme to control and exploit women and conceal his wrongdoing. To you, guilty, not guilty? What are your thoughts?
I'm thinking not guilty on this one. I've heard stories that the government's going to focus on the forced labor piece as a predicate. You know, that is just not the most compelling aspect of this trial at all to try and prove RICO, and the government has limited the bases on which a jury could find that Diddy is guilty of RICO by eliminating kidnapping and arson. So I think that charge is pretty shaky. I'm going not guilty on it.
The next one that we're looking at, sex trafficking by force, fraud, or coercion. One count pertains to alleged coercion. At least one woman, victim one, who prosecutors say was recruited, harbored, transported, and forced into commercial sexual acts using threats, psychological manipulation, and possibly violence. So we do have one that is there. I was expecting far more, honestly, and it certainly doesn't discount that one is having had this experience and is talking about it, while many more maybe are just afraid or just don't want to be thrown into that world further than they actually were. What are your thoughts on the sex trafficking by force, fraud, or coercion charge, Eric?
You know, these are the most, arguably the most serious because they do carry up to life in prison if convicted. One of the charges pertains to Cassie. The other one pertains to Jane. And it's really going to come down to, was there force or coercion? And did that directly cause these alleged
dogs,
victims
it's okay.
to engage in...
Sorry. I didn't realize my mic was on.
Oh, no problem. Okay. So it really comes down to whether the force, fraud, or coercion, whether Diddy used that to knowingly cause these alleged victims to engage in commercial sex acts against their will. And on that part, there is conflicting evidence. There's certainly testimony under oath that they didn't want to do this and they felt they had no choice. There's other text messages where they're seemingly pretty open and into the freak-offs. And so this one could go either way. I'm leaning towards not guilty on these ones as well.
Okay, number three we go to. Diddy, accused of moving individuals across state lines with the intent to engage in prostitution, part of the alleged pattern of orchestrated travel for freak-off parties involving escorts. Eric, what say you?
This one's pretty strong. I think this one is hard to defend against. The defense might say that, hey, Diddy was just paying for these folks' time and not sex, but, you know, common sense and the testimony would tell us otherwise. I think he's going down on these ones, but the thing is, these are the least severe, mm-hmm. and he could even just get time served on these charges.
What do you think, and this is a fun one, if Diddy were to survive all of this, which there's a possibility, you know, I mean, egotistically survive and, you know, PR survive is one thing. I think that's been destroyed. But if he were to, you know, have freedom again, whether it be 15 years down the road or a few years down the road, do you think he can reinvent himself? Do you think Diddy is done? Is he going to go the way of Ike Turner where it's just like, yeah, we remember you? Or do you think there's any path where Diddy can be redeemed, or that he's going to attempt to go down at least, and he'll probably get some people if he takes a certain route?
You know, it's a really interesting question. And I think that in our modern era, society is kind of fed up with a bunch of rich people mistreating folks, and especially in a criminal fashion and a sexual fashion. And I think we're kind of sick of that. We're not really going to look the other way anymore. On the other hand, in America, we love a story of redemption. And so is it at least theoretically possible that he could make some kind of comeback? You know, you think about Louis C.K., who's made a quasi comeback after some controversy, and other folks, you know, redemption, I don't think is out of the question in America.
I think if he became a preacher, that's, I mean, look at MC Hammer did it. No, MC Hammer was not accused of this sort of stuff. Mace did it, who was, you know, on Mo Money, Mo Problems. Again, not as big as Diddy. I think there's some other, I think Montel Jordan became a preacher. Again, those guys didn't have those sort of, you know, accusations against them, but it kind of gave them a new life, gave them some new income. People look at their old school artists and go, oh, they're a preacher now. How nice. I would wonder if Diddy were to go down that road, spend a couple years silent, just kind of working his little ministry. Eventually he has a mega church and he's out there dancing around. He's asking for forgiveness and the Lord forgives him. And then everybody stands up and he does his songs and makes his money on the offerings. And nobody's the wiser because everybody forgets things in the course of just a few months.
Continuing coverage of United States versus Sean Diddy Combs from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Closing arguments in the case of Sean Diddy Combs, and only one side got their full 5 hours of closing arguments in today. The prosecution, we're about to break down what happened, what it means, and also what is next in the federal trial of Sean Diddy Combs. So here we go. Let's just get right to it and what happened today. Assistant U.S. Attorney Christy Slavik made a dramatic, uncompromising closing argument, explicitly labeling Sean Diddy Combs as the head of a sophisticated and violent criminal enterprise operating behind his celebrity persona. She described Combs as someone who consistently acted above the law, leveraging fame, money, and influence to silence and control victims and witnesses alike. Slavik argued that the sheer volume of illegal activity, hundreds of individual acts over nearly 2 decades, was orchestrated methodically by Combs rather than sporadic or impulsive misconduct. And then there's the details of the freak-offs and the sex parties. Prosecutors extensively described events known as the freak-offs, dealing how Combs allegedly coerced Cassie Ventura and another woman known as Jane into drug-fueled sexual encounters involving paid escorts. Slavik painted vivid scenes for the jury, explaining how Combs allegedly manipulated these women through threats, intimidation, and force, using drugs, particularly a potent drug called Tusi, to keep them compliant, disoriented, and unable to resist or leave. Surveillance video presented again today showed the 2016 incident at the Los Angeles Hotel. Prosecutors emphasized this disturbing footage, highlighting how Combs violently threw Cassie to the floor and dragged her back into a room, underscoring their argument of the brutal control. Of course, there's the violent episodes and the patterns of abuse that they wanted to also knock home to the jury today. Another major point Slavik drove home involved the detailed testimony regarding a 2024 assault on Jane. She graphically recounted how Combs allegedly kicked, choked, and slapped Jane, dragging her by the hair to force her into a sexual encounter. This incident served to reinforce prosecutors' arguments about a long-established violent pattern. Slavik used these examples strategically to argue Combs' consistent use of violence and fear as central to his method of controlling women, reinforcing the broader sex trafficking charges. And there's the inner circle, the alleged people that helped facilitate all of this and their role in the criminal enterprise. Prosecutors describe Combs' entourage, his assistants, bodyguards, and employees as integral components of his alleged criminal activities. Slavik portrayed this inner circle as a loyal army, complicit in executing and covering up crimes. Specific allegations included the direct participation of employees in distributing drugs for the freak-offs, arranging interstate travel for sex trafficking, and offering bribes to witnesses or hotel staff to conceal evidence. Highlighted today was testimony about hotel security guards offering or being offered large sums of cash by Combs associates to suppress evidence of violence, underscoring the systematic cover-up alleged by prosecutors. It's systematic. That pattern of behavior is a very important part of trying to prove a RICO case. It's not just a one-off here and there. This is them doing this on a regular basis and feeling they have no choice but to make those actions and those wishes of Sean come to life. You have the explicit listing of the criminal acts that they also laid out. Prosecutors systematically summarized major charges against Combs today, reminding jurors explicitly of the varied crimes he's accused of orchestrating or committing. Attempted arson, allegedly targeting a car out for revenge, kidnapping, forced labor, bribery, and extensive drug distribution connected directly to sex trafficking. Slavik made clear each of these charges was backed by weeks of detailed testimony, documentation, and compelling witness statements. How will it all land and what it means? That's what we'll get to next. Thoughts on everything they laid out? And they did that for 5 hours, not 5 minutes. So that's the 5-minute summary of what they laid out today in court.
What I find fascinating is every single charge that is sitting there, it's kind of like they're going to spin the roulette wheel. Mm-hmm. All it takes is one charge, and he is in prison for pretty much the rest of his life.
Well, at least a good chunk of it.
A good chunk of it. I mean, okay, so he gets out when he's 70. He's in the prime of his life right now. So to me, that's a life sentence, really. And it just takes one charge. So really, that jury, they go into the room, they only have to decide on one charge, and his life has completely changed. It's career ending. It's possibly life ending, as in terms of freedom, you know. And then the people around him, what are they going to be charged with? Because he didn't act alone.
Immunity.
Well, true.
I think you got a lot of that. And I don't know. I think anybody that came forward thus far is probably pretty safe. Maybe that one assistant, if they can find other charges there. And I don't know what type of deal they made with her either. I mean, it could be a very, you're going to need to testify for us, or we may or may not arrest you, but you will be arrested guaranteed if you choose not to. And
well, let me ask you this. Is Cassie safe after this? Does he hold so much power in this community?
I don't know.
The rap community, you know, whatever enterprise he had going on. Is she safe after this? Because without her, this did not move forward.
Yeah.
I wonder what life's going to be like for her. This is a big deal. I mean, she almost needs witness protection, I would think.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know that there's a lot of... I just don't know the answer to that. I'm not close enough to any of that to know. Does he still have power? Does he still have goons out there who are willing to do his work? Or has pretty much everybody just ran away from Diddy? You know,
it's a good question. And now that the money's going to be gone, because I'm sure a lot of people look the other way because there's so much money at stake.
If the money's not there, I don't think he's going to have people there. And I don't know that anybody's going to want to put their well-being in jeopardy for Diddy.
Right. No money, no problems, right?
I mean, that may be the thing here. Yeah, no money, no problems. It's he'll discover that when he becomes a preacher in prison and then opens up the mega church when he gets out.
That's right. You know, as much as I don't even want to think about that, but I think you're 100% right.
Yeah.
It's equivalent to when a star cancels an engagement because of dehydration. Like, yeah, I totally saw that coming. That was on the bingo card.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just nailed it.
Racketeering conspiracy, that's charge number one. RICO, we'll break it down here and what it all could mean. He's accused of operating and managing a criminal enterprise under federal racketeering laws. Prosecutors claim he coordinated activities involving sex trafficking, forced labor, obstruction of justice, bribery, drug use, and financial manipulation as part of a long-term criminal pattern. The RICO charges essentially bundle multiple illegal acts under one overreaching conspiracy. It's also why they were able to go way back in time and pull things that would have already been out of the statute of limitations and charged them in this case, or brought them into the RICO charge as part of the conspiracy that otherwise couldn't be prosecuted anymore. That's how they did that with R. Kelly as well. Same principle. They're arguing that Diddy's actions were organized, systematic, and involved other participants or co-conspirators. And that's a part we didn't really get, I think, a lot of evidence on for co-conspirators. I mean, unless they can count, and I could be right, I could be wrong on this, I don't know. Are we counting people like his assistants and people who willingly worked for him as co-conspirators? I mean, they'd be working for the company, but they're doing illegal acts for that company. Does that make you a co-conspirator?
In my brain, it sounds like it does.
Yeah. In a legal brain, I don't know. I think a lot of us were expecting to hear, okay, and here's another person that's being indicted, and they got another trial over here. And we didn't really see that. But like I said earlier, I think the folks who did bring a lot of information probably got immunity or some sort of a deal to testify so they could get that information from them. Otherwise, they could have just lawyered up really, really, really quick. And I'm guessing the government said, if you do that, we're just going to take you away too.
So that's how they get people to talk.
Yeah. Because they had, a lot of those people who worked for him could face serious charges or could have faced serious charges for what they were doing. I'm going to ask it a question because I am curious about this. Could a co-conspirator
be interesting to see the answer?
Yeah, let's see what. Absolutely, an employee can legally be considered a co-conspirator under federal law, particularly within RICO. There you go. So there you go. You got co-conspirators. And they don't necessarily have to be charged. It just, they need to be in existence as a co-conspirator. So woman that was a lot like, is like Ghislaine Maxwell, allegedly. That's a co-conspirator. The drug mule kid, he's a co-conspirator. I'm sure there's a lot more in the infrastructure spider web of Diddy that could be in that category. Let's continue. Next charge, sex trafficking by force, fraud, or coercion. Combs faces specific charges related to coercing individuals primarily identified as Cassie Ventura and another woman known as Jane into engaging into commercial sexual acts against their will. The prosecution alleges Combs used psychological manipulation, threats of physical harm, financial control, and coercive behaviors to maintain control and force participation in sexual activities. I think that one was proven pretty well. I think it was. Transportation to engage in prostitution. Combs is accused of transporting individuals across state lines explicitly for commercial sex acts. Again, proven pretty well. Part of the alleged arrangements for his notorious freak-off parties. The federal charge targets interstate travel for prostitution-related purposes, carrying significant penalties even when coercion isn't explicitly involved. Potential consequences for all this, if he is convicted, severe sentences potentially ranging from a mandatory minimum of 15 to 20 years for RICO. That's the first charge we talked about. Up to life. So 15 to 20 minimum if convicted on that. Significant financial penalties, asset forfeiture, and restitution to victims could also apply. So they pretty much...
I think the restitution's going to happen.
They'd pretty much go in and gut him more than they already have. Sex trafficking by force, fraud, or coercion. These ones carry minimum sentences of typically 15 years with potential life imprisonment if severe circumstances or injuries are proven. Convictions under these statutes also result in substantial fines, asset seizure, and mandatory restitution. Okay. Sounding pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
Transportation for prostitution. Interstate prostitution, basically. While generally carrying lighter sentences than RICO and forced sex trafficking, convictions could still mean substantial prison terms, often up to 10 years per count, and significant fines. Depending on the number of proven incidents, penalties can circumventally lead to lengthy incarceration periods. Overall potential outcome, if convicted on the most serious charges, Sean Combs faces a realistic possibility of life imprisonment, particularly given the severity and scope of the RICO and sex trafficking charges. Even partially convicted, unlike interstate prostitution, would likely mean substantial prison time and lifelong having to face the financial consequences through restitution. So, I mean, he could end up just getting could really be a couple years if it's just on interstate prostitution.
I'm not feeling that. Are you?
I'm not, but I don't know. Juries can be tricky. He's pretty polarizing figure these days, but this is a New York jury. And he was, a pretty big figure in that city for quite some time.
So do you think this is the end of royalty and hip hop? I mean, who's Jay-Z is still out there. Who else is left?
Well, I mean, it's one thing to be like a major artist, and I guess you could call it royalty, but I don't think like Jay-Z parties it up like Diddy did. You know, he did, and he's more private than Diddy is. Diddy was, right. You know, look at me, look at me, look at me. So I mean, Diddy was an interesting character. There's no one else I can really think of that was like Diddy, you know, that actually, you know, had the power and wasn't just trying to look like it. The only one
Kanye's trying.
Yeah, but Kanye went nuts.
Right.
The only other person I can think of in hip hop that also kind of faded into the back, but was also a very successful business person would have been Master P. He had... And I always wonder, like, how? like, most of your artists were not big. Like, you had a handful of hit songs, but he had a clothing line, which was pretty big. I think maybe a lot of the money came from clothing. I don't know. But I was always kind of wondering, how the hell does he have all this? He never had a remote amount of success that was comparable to, like, Bad Boy Records or Death Row Records. I mean, they had some, but it wasn't... It wasn't to that level.
There's incredible markup in clothing, though. I think if you do it right, I bet you can make a mint. I bet you just make bank like crazy. I mean, remember back, and this is insider information, but we would give away t-shirts at the radio station. Mm-hmm. Those t-shirts, and I remember I bought some when I worked in promotions for our radio station, or was forced to do promotions. Let's put it that way. I didn't typically do it, but t-shirts were 25 cents a piece. Now, back if you then. Think about it, I just went to an AC/DC concert. Paid $75 or $50 for a t-shirt? And so this was probably 20 years ago that they were 25 cents a shirt. But even let's just say for inflation's sake, it's a dollar a shirt.
No,
they're
charging
$50.
If you're getting screen printing on it and it's a shirt of like, and it's like a not a super, super cheap one, you're talking at least probably $250 to $350 for a okay one. You're probably $5 to $7 for a thicker, better quality one.
Yeah, the one at the AC/DC concert was not high quality. Yeah. It was a cotton, like a jersey's shirt. No big deal. Like something you'd find at Target, maybe. Yeah.
You know,
no big deal.
We should be putting merch on our thing, and I haven't. And I always hate it because you have to put such a markup on it to make anything, and I feel like an asshole. Because I'm like, even like at minimum, I feel like that's really expensive. But everybody has it out there. It shouldn't be for me to judge. If you want to spend your money on it, I appreciate it. But there is such a huge markup on some of that stuff, or you have to mark it up to make money, because some of these things, I mean, unless you're producing it directly and shipping it yourself, but if you're doing one of these services where they print it and somebody orders it, I mean, you're making a very few bucks on a product unless you really mark it up. But
yeah, and I have a hard time spending money on t-shirts that are, you know, $25, $30.
Some people love it.
I can justify it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anything above $30, unless it's just, again, you know, you're at a concert, you want to remember the concert. For me, it's always a t-shirt. But again, the markup in clothing is substantial. So I understand why some of these musicians go into the clothing industry, because that's where the money sits.
Yeah, I mean, I could, so other than Diddy, I don't know. I don't know there's anybody else really comparable alive that
or out of jail.
You know, I mean, in another format of music, I mean, you know, you had Clive Griffin, but if we're talking like black artists that paved ways and really, you know, did some amazing stuff in his career. I mean, he checked all the boxes. You know, he expanded his business beyond the music, and that extreme power and all that money, I think, went beyond his head and blew it up. But I think he was someone who was already susceptible to that going in, you know, very showman-like, and if he, you know, has to be the center of attention. And I just think you push somebody to such extremes, or he pushes himself to such extremes, and the only thing you end up liking is extremes. And that would explain, I think, a lot of the sexual behavior too. So, closing arguments coming from the defense, supposedly. That'll be on Friday, and we'll see where that all goes and give you a recap of that. And I'm going to guess, I mean, if they wrap up early, it could go to the jury in the afternoon. I would say probably more likely they might just say Monday, you know, we'll pick it up. But we'll see. Depends. I mean, they got to be arguing something, I would think. I don't think they're just going to go, we rest on that, too. I'd be shocked.
I would think so.
I would think.
And don't forget, we have a holiday coming. Do you think that jury wants to have that looming over their head?
They got no choice about that. That's this next week. So are you saying you think they'll get it done before the 4th? Like that'll be incentive to wrap it up?
So it might that's be, what I'm thinking.
It might be an incentive then to start tomorrow if the defense is done by then. Because there's still rebuttal.
True.
But if the defense doesn't do anything, then maybe they're either, I don't know. This, if you got that and you got rebuttal, I'm guessing Monday. And then it'll be 4 days until they probably, I don't know, two or three, probably a 3-day, 4-day week. I don't know what they're have their schedule for. I don't know that it's going to take very long.
I don't think it is.
I'm going to say if they have a full day, If Monday is a full day, I think Monday will get a verdict. I think whatever day it goes on, if it's a full day, we'll have it. If it starts really late in the afternoon somewhere, I think you're up for the next, but.
Dang.
There you go. That's the latest in the world of Diddy. Be sure to comment in the comment section on YouTube and let us know what you think. Also, if you're listening to the podcast, wherever it may be, check out our YouTube channel, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, and comment there. And now you can even comment before anybody else when you become a premium member on YouTube. You also get access to all the videos before everybody else. That's how you get to comment before everybody else. So if you want in on that, check that out. It's a new premium service that we're offering on our YouTube channel. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Until next time, for Stacy, I'm Tony. We will talk again real soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.